the planned reductions in child mortality, maternal mortality, and HIV rates may not be achieved by 2015 as targeted in the so-called Millennium Development Goals. In resource-poor countries, non-communicable chronic diseases such as diabetes and heart disease, as well as HIV, are now undermining these very goals. That's the finding of a report published by scientists from London, Oxford and San Francisco. Martin McKee of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine told me that chronic diseases no longer affect only the rich countries.
We often describe these conditions as diseases of affluence, but really that's a very outdated view. There have been major improvements in child survival across the developing world in the last number of decades, from immunisation, clean water, insecticide-treated bed nets and so on, and that has allowed people to live to older ages. And as they've done so, they have acquired many of the diseases that we have associated with the rich world. At the same time, they're being exposed to the risk factors that they were not previously exposed to, particularly the aggressive marketing by the global tobacco companies, and also the consumption of energy-dense foods, soft drinks and so on, which is creating a double burden. So we're seeing many countries in Africa where we have side-by-side malnutrition and obesity in children.
So it's marketing, active marketing by big business of tobacco and certain foodstuffs that could be among the biggest factors, are you saying?
That is certainly one of the factors. The primary factor is that people are now surviving into adulthood, so they're living long enough to get these diseases. But beyond that, the major risk factors are certainly the exposure to these risk factors like tobacco and energy-dense food, which are being peddled very actively throughout the developing world, because certainly for tobacco in particular, they're losing their markets in the West and they need to make their profits elsewhere.
Now, some of the goals are actually going in reverse. I think you have that in sub-Saharan Africa, infant deaths are getting worse at the moment.
Well, in some countries they are. Now, of course, we do need to take account of other factors that are involved in specific countries. Clearly, a country that is going through a civil war will experience at least a temporary reversal. But we've been looking more at the generality of progress. But yes, we cannot be complacent at all.
Now, I know that your job as a scientist is to analyse what's happening, but what do you think could be done to put things right?
Well, we were able to look at the statistical associations. We didn't look at the micro level detail of what was happening within families, although we did review the literature that helps us to understand this. We see very clearly that the onset of a non-communicable disease, a chronic disease in a family, is often impoverishing. Families that were the breadwinner or one of the adult members of the family gets one of these diseases have to pay very large sums of money to look after that member of the family. They often have to sell assets. They can no longer borrow money, they get into debt, and they face enormous problems, which then has knock-on consequences for childhood survival.
Now, reducing the burden of HIV in the world was one of the Millennium Development Goals, and yet you're saying that HIV is actually one of the impediments at the moment. Can you just explain that?
Yes, well, the relationship of HIV here is rather complex. It is one of the Millennium Development Goals in its own right, but what we were able to show is that a high rate of HIV has an effect on the other Millennium Development Goals, particularly child mortality, that goes beyond the impact that HIV has directly through mother-to-child transmission, for example. And that is because, again, an adult contracting HIV is going to be, well, first of all, is going to be much more likely to be impoverished. They're much more likely to face economic hardship. But also, we're now recognising as people survive with HIV, it is itself associated with a number of non-communicable diseases. We're seeing that in the West as well, of course.
And HIV in many situations has become chronic.
HIV has been changed from an acute disease. The parallels with diabetes are striking. If you think of diabetes before 1921 and the discovery of insulin, children with type 1 diabetes would have wasted away in 18 months in the same way that children with HIV would have done before the advent of antiretrovirals. Now, both of them can survive into adulthood or even into old age, but with many complications. And it was really only in the 1940s and 50s we realised that there were the long-term complications of diabetes. We are now seeing a similar phenomenon with HIV.
You're painting a picture which we could interpret as being very bleak. Can you say that there has been an improvement, and if so, by how much, in resource-poor settings of health?
Well, in a way, we are actually seeing the problems of success, because it is, to some extent, the fact that children are surviving into adulthood, that they are getting the non-communicable diseases, what was described 40 years ago as the epidemiological transition. So, yes, there have been major gains, but with all gains, that throws up other problems. But the change in terms of child survival, and in many countries the reduction in maternal mortality, has really been quite spectacular. There is a persisting challenge with HIV, but these changes are throwing up new challenges in the guise of chronic diseases.
What should the average person concerned with public health be thinking about trying to do, and indeed the average citizen?
Well, I think for the public health professionals, we need to change the nature of the discourse on development and see it as being rather more than child and maternal health, to look at the role of adult health and particularly the role of non-communicable diseases. These diseases have been seen as problems for the rich countries and not for the poor countries, but I think that is now beginning to change. Another problem, of course, is that they're often packaged and labelled as lifestyle choices, as if people choose to smoke or choose to eat unhealthy diets, whereas, of course, we know that people are highly constrained in what they do. The food available to them may be very limited, the choices are limited, and they are subject to aggressive marketing. And with tobacco, of course, nicotine is a highly addictive drug, which is being pushed with remarkable ferocity by the transnational tobacco companies. These are not lifestyle choices, these are socially determined conditions.
So fatty foods, foods with too much sugar in them, and tobacco need to be reduced, it seems. Would you favour legislation then?
Yes, I would favour legislation, and we already have legislation in the case of tobacco. We have international legislation in the form of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. However, I think if we look at research from the high-income countries, there now is an overwhelming case for additional taxation on sugary drinks. We see a bizarre situation in much of Africa, where if diet drinks are available at all, and often they're not, they're often at double the price or more of the sugary drinks of the same brand, which is really quite ridiculous.
Martin McKee, Professor of European Public Health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. He was discussing the article he co-wrote in the medical journal PLOS Medicine from the Public Library of Science. For Audio News from the London School of Hygiene, I'm Peter Goodwin.